All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mount West Wire football podcast, week four. Is that right, Matt Kennerly? Week four?
Yes, it is.
Already?
Already, yeah.
We got two byes this week, so technically 25% of the season sort of done, but not really. But MWWire.com is our website. Where would you put this weekend? Would this be maybe the top weekend for you in the Mountain West?
It's hard to say. The entire month of September has been pretty good to the conference.
Yeah, beating up on those so-called Power 5 teams.
Mm-hmm.
This week was pretty exciting. Like, we had the first week where we beat up on, Missouri. We had the UCLA game a couple weeks ago with San Diego State. Boise State beating Florida State. But can we just say, I said on our Twitter account, and people can say what they want, but I'm going to say right now, the San Jose State victory is the best win for the conference by far.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any argument on your end with that one?
You could probably take that up with any number of fan bases, to be
honest. I'm just saying, in relative to talent and what expectations were, there was no chance that game was going to go this way.
No, I mean, if you're going to make that argument, you point out the fact that, they were at least 20-point underdogs?
Yeah.
So that's how you make that argument.
Just saying, big wins there. Like, we'll get to each game individually. I just want to do kind of a little bit big picture stuff. We got a Throwbos, possibly reincarnating that hashtag with zombie Throwbos or something, maybe we'll do. We had CSU nearly pull off a victory with, hey, Nate Craig Myers told you to be pretty good, guys. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the big thing here, rankings, because everybody likes rankings. And I guess we do have the coaches pull out as we're recording. Boise, do you have the tweet up of who lost over the weekend?
I don't remember all of them, but I can remember some of the ones at the bottom.
I can tell you one. Utah lost to USC. Oh, boy.
Yeah, Utah lost.
Michigan got slacked.
For those of you who stayed up late last night, you saw Wazoo lose.
What?
After blowing a 32-point lead.
Did UCLA, was that my right seeing UCLA scored 50 second-half points?
That's right.
Oh, boy. Pac-12.
And not only that, but Arizona State lost as well.
Central Florida lost.
A&M lost. Texas A&M, rather, lost in a ranked matchup with LSU. Was it LSU?
No, or Auburn. Auburn.
Auburn, yeah.
Yeah, my brother's not happy about that one. Notre Dame lost to Georgia in a close one. Both all
so
that.
So I think it was like six or seven teams altogether in the top 25.
Boise State.
And, oh, let's not forget UCF.
Oh, yeah. They have their two-year regular season winning streak. Kaput, whatever you want to say. That puts Boise State 15 and in the driver's seat with UCF, if we're going by the coaches poll, 8 spots behind at the moment, 15 to 23.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the only rankings that matter don't come out for another 5 weeks or so.
I believe it's the first Tuesday after Halloween. It's like November 2nd or 3rd or something like that.
Yeah, but I made the analogy of, when you set up a screen pass and then you've got like three or four offensive line out in front of you blocking and things like that. So, if you're a Broncos fan this week, looking at teams like Pitt, like UCLA, like Colorado, those are your offensive linemen. They're clearing wide open space for you.
Exactly. Or the Pac-12 just screwing themselves where, don't talk about Utah too much, but you lose to a third string quarterback, lose your starting running back in the game. Your all conference secondary gets torched. Oh, man. I'm sorry. I'm bitter. I'm just mad about that. Hey, Utah fans, at least you're not Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Who got smoked by Wisconsin, who they're probably gonna make the playoff, right? Badgers, they're pretty good.
I mean, but they're gonna be in the mix. They probably still have to go through Ohio State.
Yeah, whatever. They put up their 60-something on Ohio or Miami, Ohio, so yeah. Anything else, like what big things you mentioned in the league? We have the Boise top 15. Is there a team getting points? I didn't check the official.
Yeah, so in the coaches poll, at least Utah State also earned 9 points, and there Hawaii has 1 point.
Who's won for Hawaii?
I don't know.
I'm saying down. Does Nick Rolovich have a vote?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I guess that wouldn't surprise me.
If you're voting for a random team at 25, I don't care. You know what I mean? It's like when Steve Spurrier put Duke at 25 forever when Duke was just garbage every single time. So that's what we got for the rankings. We'll probably, I think during here, we'll get the AP pull out, which probably be similar. Let me ask you this really quick. So teams around Boise State, we're not Boise State fans per se. If they do well, it's great. It's fun. But if we're going to have like our buddy Roger, Eric, or Colin talk about it, would you think Boise State is like better than Iowa, Oregon, or Texas?
I think they would be kind of a toss-up against Oregon. They're probably better than Iowa. And what was the third one?
Texas.
Texas. I mean, I'm not necessarily a believer in Texas.
Nobody is.
So I don't know.
Okay, I'm just curious. Because that put them out. That's about the 12th spot. So, but like I said, they got the airbrain in front of them. Just keep winning. And it's all basically, like, if we look at the schedule, maybe we'll do an article because they're on a bye week this week. It could be something fun to do. If you look on strength of schedule, like if you look at Sagar and SP Plus and some other metrics, FEI, of who quality opponents, I don't see any way any team could pass Boise State with them not losing. Mm-hmm. Even with SMU getting the win over a 25th TCU, SMU's, are they even getting votes down here? I don't really think they're getting votes in the yeah, they get 63 points. So they're on the cusp of top 25. And so I think it'd be very hard for, like, even if they were to keep winning and UCF keep winning again, and it comes, you know, I mean, I don't think they'd pass Boise State if Boise doesn't lose the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll keep that in mind. But let's get to that Boise game on Friday night. This was a close one for about three quarters. 30-19. Air Force Boise, 0 points in first quarter. Are you surprised? Like, everybody complained, not complained, but, like, that's the wrong word to use, obviously. Concerns about the triple option offense. Is that in the past by far for Boise State defense since they held Air Force well below their average in yards and yards per play?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard to say because on the one hand, you know, Air Force, it wasn't like they totally shut Air Force down. Mm-hmm. You know, on the ground, you know, they did have five carries of more than 10 yards, and they actually did manage a few big passing plays as well, including the touchdown that Donald Hammond had to Jerod Sanders from 31 yards out. But I think, you know, rather than answering that question, I think it's just a credit to the depth that Boise State has built up front that they were able to pretty much contain the triple option in this case. Because I went and did the math because I was writing about Sonatani Louis in my weekly winners and losers column today. And you know, other than those chunk plays, the big three of Taven Berto, Hammond, and Caden Rensburg, and the rest of the Falcons running game, they only averaged 3.7 yards per play. And I think that that's more of a credit to the guys up front than, you know, Air Force losing any effectiveness, if that makes sense.
No, I do too. It's like they had those 10. What did you say? How many 10 plus yard plays? 15?
No, they had five. Oh, they had five, sorry, on 15. The ground, yeah.
Sorry, 15, like, that seems way too much. But also, that's a decent amount, but they also only had a 1 for 20. They didn't have that huge running play. They sometimes seemingly get 35, 40, 50-plus yards.
That's true.
And so that's what you do in the option. Offense, like, give up all the yards you want. Like, Air Force had a decent amount of yards and a handful of reasonably chunk plays, 10 yards or so. You're not going to – don't allow the 80-yard play. Let them get 240 yards like they got in this game. But if it's at a 4 yards a clip, 3.5, 5 yards a clip, that's fine. Just don't give up that big 60-yard. That's why New Mexico years ago, they would have that two big plays that were touchdowns, like 70-yarders, and mm-hmm. that's how they beat teams. And so they did – like I said, they contained it. Air Force will get yards regardless. It just wasn't – Air Force just wasn't explosive in Boise's defense. Like you said, it has those guys back there to stop it now. And there was a concern kind of bounced around here when Hank Bachmeier left the game because he keeps getting wrecked every other play, it seems like. And I thought for a minute Chase Cordes could play for a while, but he came back. They switched back, and he actually ended up with a very nice game. But is there a team, like, who's going to – like, there'd be a point where he's – enough is enough with that offensive line not being at full strength, or is it just hoping he works until it doesn't work?
I mean, I guess so.
It's not ideal.
It's – well, and see, here's the thing, like in tandem, perhaps, I don't know if, you know, how much of a correlation you can draw, but you know, the fact that he has had kind of slow starts nearly week in and week out is something that may come back to bite them at some point. Because in this game, for instance, he was only 2 for his first 6, but he did finish 19 of 26, 260 mm-hmm. yards and a couple touchdowns. So it all worked out in the end. And he was able to, you know, create big plays, you know, in a way that really kind of doomed the Falcons. You know, we talk about the chunk plays that Air Force had through the air, and that was a big factor for Boise in this game too. They had 7 passes of more than 15 yards, including the 2 touchdowns that ultimately made the difference in this game.
Another thing I think a big difference, just kind of as we are going here and there, that Hugh did that big 77-yard drive in second half down by 3, stopped Air Force, or excuse me, made the 4th-and-1, and then scored again on another big drive. Because the game was close. Like, Air Force, like, the talent, yeah, a little better on Boise State side, but Air Force has good players as well. Their scheme works well. They kept with it. But those two consecutive touchdowns in that second half is kind of what did Air Force in. And they just kind of got behind a touch more than they wanted to. And it's like Boise, it's like the Florida State game and other games. Second half, Boise either makes adjustments or just figures something out or makes the plays they didn't make that they weren't making before. And those two touchdown drives second half were pretty much it. Because Air Force, one thing too, there's a couple things. Air Force missed, I don't remember who it was. I think it was in second half. Do you remember the wide open pass that was overthrown?
I do not.
Trying to remember when it was, but it was wide open. I don't think Air Force didn't get points out of it, but wide open would have been a touchdown. And then Boise got a little lucky on one play. I'm sure most people saw this. The play, I don't remember who caught it, unfortunately. It was down to the sideline to about the inside the red zone. Like, it bounced. The guy caught it, bounced up. The Air Force guy goes, looks like he has the ball, interception. Like, hits off his knee. Not wildly bounced, but kind of like just bouncing around the body.
Oh, was it down. The tip drill interception that they had?
No, not the interception, the catch by Boise State.
Oh, okay.
It was down the sideline, sort of. I think it may have been CT Thomas. I don't recall. But it was a pass where it looked like Air Force was coming up with it, because as the two guys were coming down, they collided. The ball kind of just moves around between the knees to the chest, the Boise guy. Mm-hmm. And he ends up falling through the Air Force defender as he's making the tackle. I'm like, holy crap, what is that? Is that an interception? A complete pass? End up being a complete pass. Then Boise scores a touchdown. It was a little bit just kind of a fluky type play where concentration was there mentally to catch it. There was just a few spots where, I'm just kind of arguing Air Force side, where, yeah, the guy made the catch. It was a little bit lucky that he made the catch just because the bounce went his way, which happens. We know fumble luck and all that stuff. The weirdly shaped football, Matt, we know how it is.
That's
he
came true.
Down, came down with it, scored. I'm saying Air Force had a couple of chances where the ball, a couple inches here or there, it could have been a different game. Maybe Boise still wins. Maybe Boise has another down and scores anyways after that incomplete pass, but if the interception. This is a game where, yeah, 11 points, Boise outshined Air Force in the second half. But Air Force is still a pretty good team. And I'm so confident saying they could win maybe 9 or 10 games. Because this game is one we both predicted Boise to win even back in the preseason.
Well, but here's the thing, though. You say it's a game of inches. And to me, I look at that fourth down stop that Boise had early in the fourth quarter where they were up by only 4. And Air Force decided to give it to Berto 4 straight times right around midfield. And, you know, going back to my original point, it's a credit to the guys up front. You know, Sonatani Louis, who had 16 tackles up front. You know, David Moa, I think, almost had 10 tackles. And Kafari Buffalo, who we haven't really talked about this much so far this season. But, you know, he came in to replace Ezekiel Noah, who got banged up, I think it was about halfway through the game. You know, he had 10 tackles as well. So all of those guys played extremely well. And that's one of those real subtle breaks where, you know, maybe Air Force converts that fourth down and they march down the field. Maybe they get a little bit closer. Maybe they retake the lead and it changes the whole tenor of the game. But instead, you know, Boise is able to answer. They get the ball in midfield and they take it for a touchdown.
And then an interception and then another touchdown, which was basically ball game.
Yeah, so, you know, 11-point margin of victory, but I think that even that might be a little bit deceptive.
In which way? Boise could have won by more? Or
I think it could have been a lot closer.
Oh, closer. Okay, I was trying to figure it out. Yeah, me too. Like I said, that one play where they got a touchdown off the bobbled catch and the missed pass. So I don't know if Air Force still would have won, but it's, yeah, teams are a touch closer than this indicates. Because, right, they give it to Berto so many times. They're passing reasonably well. Maybe do a play action on fourth one. I don't know. It's like risky midfield. Or why not? Like, here's the thing too. Like, you're down by 4. Like, I'm not a college coach or anything. But if you're playing like the NCAA football or Madden, like 4th and 1, you got an Air Force team. They know what you're doing. Why don't you, like I said, play action, go for the end zone. If it's interception, who cares? They get the ball, like at the 5.
That's a good point.
Just
I think
a thought, but
I think they were trying to keep the Boise State defense on the field.
Yeah,
which
I
they
get
had a lot of success.
Yeah, I get that as well. I'm trying to think. If you're running on 3rd down, like you're in a 1st down, good. 2nd down. No gain. You got on 3rd. I guess it's only a yard, so it's not. It's a smart play, and people know they're on more likely going to run than not. I'm just trying to think, like, it's just second guessing. That's all it is. It's not that I'm right or wrong or indifferent of what's going on. It's just a play where it's like, well, maybe your passing game's okay. Then you're going to run, suck them in. Everybody's putting 10 guys in the box down there. Just a thought, but this doesn't change any, like, for Air Force's season or even Boise State season. This is pretty much where we both had them, so it's kind of par for the course.
Yeah.
For going forward, so. So Boise's ranked 15th. Good for them. Air Force is 2-1. Not a big deal. All right, what do we got next here? We go to Saturday. All the games on Saturday. It was a good Friday night game, too. It was nice to have a competitive, only one game, not like 3-5 on Friday night, because not 3-5, but dueling games, because that happens time to time. Should we start with, where do you want to start Saturday, then?
Well, I think we got to start at the beginning with Tulsa 24, Wyoming 21.
Do we have to? Quarterbacks! Who's going to play quarterback? Quarterback.
See, you know what this game, I think this game was Wyoming running up against its limitations, because in a lot of respects, they did a lot of things right to win this game.
Yeah.
You know, they outgained Tulsa on a per play basis. They held the Golden Hurricane to just 4.7 yards per play. You know, the defense had 7 sacks. They had 14 tackles for loss.
14, 7 hurries. Jeez, Zach Smith is getting crushed.
So even though they were outgained in terms of raw total offense, the defense put them in a position to win this game. But they still haven't figured out that passing game, man. And
that's the thing. And defense as well, both sides of passing.
Well, and it's not all about Chambers either in this instance. You know, the receivers kind of let him down at least a little bit. So, you know, 9 of 25 for 193 yards and a touchdown doesn't necessarily look great. But I don't know that you can, at least in this instance, pin it 100% on him. But when you consider the fact that, you know, Xavien Valade came into the game banged up, he only had 18 yards on 5 carries. And then they also lost Titus Swen and Trey Smith to injuries.
Do they have a running back healthy now for next week?
They got the fullback, I think.
Well, and Chambers, he's a running back.
And Sean Chambers, who, by the way, he had 83 yards on the ground and a couple of scores. Yeah. And very nearly had the game-winning touchdown at the end.
So close.
But you could easily make an argument, I think, that the game should not have unfolded the way that it did. And the reason that it did was because they just haven't been able to have a successful passing game.
Yeah, it's like, be okay. Like, they brought in Tyler Vanderwall for a little bit because Chambers was playing so poorly. He didn't do any better. 1 of 6 for 21 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the one confidence, if you want to look at it, in that fourth quarter, they had 214 passing yards. About 80-something came on in the fourth quarter, or I guess 2 drives essentially late. And so there's some confidence there that can get things done, but you got to be more consistent. And, like, if it'll be interesting going forward, if, depending on how the health of the running backs, if they don't have a good, healthy running game, and Chambers is completing a third of his passes, which is what he's doing all year, I'm surprised Wyoming's 3-1 with how they're doing. It's like, with the quarterback play, they have a good running game, good defense. Pass defense is questionable at the moment. But winning games like this, it's going to be tough. It's going to be all sort of close games like this, and kind of sloppy a little bit, too.
Well, we mentioned it very briefly on the preview podcast, too, that, you know, other
that nobody
podcasts
heard.
That, you know, podcasts ain't played nobody basically said that in a lot of respects, Wyoming's been a little bit lucky so far.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think this is the kind of team that's built, for instance, that's, you know, to go 3 of 15 on third downs, which, by the way, they were averaging 3rd and 9 throughout this game. This is not a team that is built to do that and succeed. So
no team is, really. So.
So they need to find a way to be more well-rounded if they want to have a chance to be a dark horse in this division.
The weird thing is, like, look at all the deep passing plays they had, too.
Mm-hmm.
30 yards, 22, 28, 53. They had multiple chunk passing plays. Like, he averaged 10 yards at completion.
Mm-hmm.
Or for speaking of Chambers, because Vanderbilt had the one for 21. But they need to be just run. And I guess they're not built, I don't think, to run, because part of the reason they do well running because Chambers runs off of either broken plays. I don't recall how many design runs they give him. Maybe that's something they try to do to get the running game going. Or not the running game going, but get the offense going. So you can't run 40 times a game and then pass 10 with his offense. These guys aren't built for that, what they can do. They still need to pass maybe not 32 times, but maybe turn it back down. Do what San Diego State does typically. They want to throw maybe 20 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think this offense is emulated a little bit. But then again, if nobody's healthy running back, this next week, are they off this week or do they have a game this next Saturday? Next week, week 5.
Let me pull up the schedule real quick. I think they're playing
UNLV. Yeah, they got UNLV.
Yeah.
So there's no bye week to get healthy. They have a bye week after that before they take San Diego State in mid-October. But if they don't have a running game or healthy running backs, that game UNLV is going to be quite interesting.
Well, and not only that, but they may have also lost another offensive lineman, a significant injury too. You know, Logan Harris had what they thought was a neck injury. And our new Wyoming writer, Ryan Martinez, actually came out and said last night that he's been released from the hospital. Yeah. So he traveled back to Wyoming with the team. Mm-hmm. But if they miss him for any extended amount of time, that's just, you know, another cog that they really need if they want to be this run first kind of punch you in the mouth offense.
Yeah, it was a head and neck injury too, so that's pretty risky. Or not risky, but it could be a tough injury for especially playing football. And so I don't know. Injuries are piling up. Good thing he's released from the hospital. We'll see what he's able to do next week. But let's move on to the next one. Is this the point explosion you expected between Lobos and Aggies, New Mexico and New Mexico State?
I thought it would be an offensive friendly game, but I did not expect this.
So I'm sure we're assuming the starting quarterback is settled for New Mexico.
If it's not,
Tavaka,
I would really question whoever's making the decisions in the building over there.
Yeah, yeah, I guess it's still Bob Davie, sort of. But 55-52, Lobos nearly blow a lead they had in this game, which had been so Lobo fashion, to blow a fifth. What were they at? 48-38. They're at 55-45. 55-38 in the fourth quarter. It nearly blew that game because the Aggies scored back-to-back touchdowns and picked out how to pick as well in that game. In that succession. And so 55 points. Offense looked fine. Like running game stood out. It's just that freaky defense. Receiving game. Like, man, I think their hoardiness of JUCO receivers is finally paying off with Joe Daly as their OC. Finally, after years and years of, we're being a passing team now. We're going to be a passing team. And it finally showed up against, well, not a good team, but it still showed up.
Yeah, and to that point, you know, you just go down the line. You know, nobody on the team had more than three catches, but you know, Jordan Kress had a couple of touchdowns with a long of 55 yards, mm-hmm. and Marcus Williams had a 42-yard catch, and you know, he had two catches, 73 yards. So his other one was a 31-yard catch.
Yeah. Good job.
You know, Cedric Peterson took a wide receiver screen for 62 yards and a score. Even Elijah Lilly had a 29-yard catch. So they finally found a way to supplement the explosiveness that we saw against Sam Houston State with a little bit of efficiency on the ground too. And Tui Yodi was a really key component of that because not only did he throw for 355 yards, he averaged over 8 yards on the ground too, which is not nothing.
Yeah. 7-59.
And you know, Amari Davis, I would say he had maybe his best all around performance as a Lobo. You know, he 28 carries, 133 yards, and two scores. And even if you take away the long, you know, he was still averaging around 4 yards per carry, which is functional. And I think that if New Mexico wants to be this kind of pass heavy team, you know, they can't be in a position where they can ignore the run. And so if Amari Davis can just do that, you know, him and Tuioti, and you know, maybe if they keep including guys like Bryson Carroll and Davon Vigilant, who, you know, they had 12 carries between them too, and they were both over 4 yards a carry.
Well, and they were still mainly right. They still ran the ball 51 times, so they're not going away from that.
Yeah. So I mean, would it be bold to say that maybe they could surprise some people?
Who could they surprise? Like Wyoming?
I mean, if we know that they have an explosive offense. And
we think we do.
And for the first time, too, they also showed that they could be a little bit opportunistic as well, because you know, while the offense is obviously kind of the big story in the game, let's not forget that they opened the scoring with a pick six by Jarek Reed. And they had a blocked field goal that, you know, when you consider the game was a 3-point game, turned out to be pretty crucial in the end. So it kind of reminds me of what I talked about in our preseason preview about the Lobos, where I didn't think that this was going to be an outright disaster, but I think that they have shown me more to be more optimistic than I think I might have been a week or two ago.
I think so as well. I don't get hurt of playing because if you play this team, the level of competition is a touch lower, but they show that when talent level is more matched evenly, they can play well. And hopefully, like, conference-wise, okay, they got next game. They play Liberty next week, so we'll see how that goes with a bunch of points. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what device Hugh Freeze is coaching in, who knows, but it's not a negative clearly. Yeah, giving up 52 points is not ideal at all, because they gave up 4 on the ground, 7-3 in the air, 7 total TDs there. They had Adkins was extremely accurate, but overall it's like it's fine. They need to get wins wherever they can. And I don't care if they give up 50 points, but if they're going to beat anybody else, like sneak up on anybody, defense has to get better. Offense, great. It's always been usually, we know the offense has been better than defense for the Lobos for the past number of years. And so I think, I don't know what the next step would be. Next step would be, I guess, keeping the offense in consistent line with similar to this game. Maybe obviously not points or total yardage-wise, but maybe percentage-wise of going forward. Like say they get fewer yards, but they're still efficient enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the defense has to. You can't give up 50 points. Like, come on, that's freaking New Mexico State. You give up 52 points. Liberty can score a lot of points. They might give up like 80 points against Liberty.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, you know, everybody expected this to be a disaster on all fronts. And, you know, this is the second time in 3 games now that they've shown that they can survive against teams that they should be able to beat, you know, mm-hmm. with an explosive offense that may be able to, you know, offer a little bit of balance as well. So, I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, what says now that they can't beat, like, for instance, a Colorado State.
Yeah, we'll get to them in a minute.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, I mean, I say Wyoming, but, like, their defense is too good. But, like, CSU, do they have San Jose State this year, I think, did you?
I don't have the entire schedule.
I have it here. Yeah, they got CSU. They go to San Jose State. Who knows with Hawaii, it's at home. So there's maybe a chance where they could sneak up a surprise, but I'm not going to probably not going to predict wins down the road, but it wouldn't shock if this performance is somewhat similar to next week or the week after.
It's intriguing, and I think if you're a Lobos fan, you can feel a little better about the direction the team is headed.
Exactly. All right, next up, we have, as I mentioned, the win of the year, perhaps. Now say it, win of the year. San Jose State 31, Arkansas, you know, the SEC mat where it means more, 24 points.
And it wasn't a fluke either.
No. Did you also like, really quick, did you see the halftime tweet by Arkansas football?
That was hilarious.
If you didn't see it, check our Twitter feed, MWC Wire. It's in there somewhere. But it's basically an Arkansas player tackling a Spartan player, which is fine. It just says halftime. No score, nothing. And people have clearly pointed that out in their mentions.
Mm-hmm.
When it was 24-7. You know what's good about this game? 5 interceptions for San Jose State defense.
Spartan secondary is back. I mean, they had a recent track record of having like pretty decent, if not necessarily top shelf secondaries. And that was all the difference in this game. You know, not only the fact that they intercepted 5 passes, but they broke up 6 more too.
So this game could have been a blowout for San Jose State. You know why?
It absolutely could have.
5 interceptions. Do you know how many points it scored off of those interceptions, Matt?
It was 7, right?
7. Okay, well, one was the end of the game, so there's that, and one near the end of the half. Mm-hmm. But still, they did not score. They only had 7 points off 5 picks. So, okay, even if we go 3-for-7, because the end of the half, they're in midfield with not much time left, they had other chances to score more points and not make it as close as it was in the second half when the Razorbacks were making their comeback.
Well, to be fair, 3 of those 5 interceptions were also on their own side of the field as well.
True. But still, you stopped them from scoring, which is obviously the point. I'm just saying there were chances where I'm not downing them. So maybe like, oh, he's being down on the win. I'm like, no, you get the ball, you should try to score. And they just, there's circumstances preventing them from good opportunities or chances to score off their defensive prowess.
Mm.
But still, it's a good victory, man. By far, amazing victory. Josh Love, 400 yards. Passing game, Trey Walker, pretty good. Not too bad.
12 catches, 161 yards. Okay. I mean, I was maybe the most impressed by his performance in this game, just because we're so used to him being a downfield threat. But in this particular game, his longest catch was only 20 yards.
Yeah.
But it was clear that they wanted to get the ball in his hands. You know, when you consider that he had 16 targets and nobody else on the team had more than 6, you know, he showed that he could be a big time player. And I think that was something maybe we all expected coming into the year, but it was still kind of shocking to see that they were able to, that connection between Love and Walker was able to do so much damage throughout this game.
So what was is our because we saw Arkansas and Colorado State last week play a sort of a close game, pretty close. What changed? What do you think changed from, like, on the Arkansas side for, like, in general, how were these two games different? Is it just that secondary finally stepped up? Because we assumed Arkansas was a, what were they, 3-touchdown favorite, 22-point favorite, and they were getting manhandled in the first half.
Yeah, and I mean, what's kind of interesting is the fact that San Jose State didn't have any sacks in this game, but it seemed like they were getting pressure on Nick Starkel with three guys, four guys. They weren't really blitzing him a lot, and they were just getting home. They were putting pressure on him. They were forcing him into mistakes. They were forcing him to sail passes. You know, his footwork didn't necessarily look clean when he was trying to, you know, throw the ball away and trying to bring this team back. And, you know, even though their running back, Rakeem Boyd, did have 91 yards on 18 carries, the fact that they were trailing for so often in this game kind of meant that he was a non-factor for long stretches. So even though they only had four tackles for loss as well, you know, they made big plays when it counted. You know, Kyle Harmon had 2.5 tackles for loss. You know, Bobby Brown had the two interceptions, of course. And Nahemi Shelton, who had one of those interceptions, honestly, probably could have had two or three more, because there was multiple passes that the Spartans could have picked off and just, you know, for one reason or another, just clanged off their hands, or it was like just like a foot out of reach or something like that. But then, you know, that's a credit to the entire defense, where, you know, we're so used to seeing, you know, kind of star performances from guys like Ethan Aguayo, who, by the way, he also had an interception. But this was a team effort, and this is exactly the kind of thing that I had been talking about in the preseason, where, you know, we've seen stretches of this before, but this is the most complete game that we've seen from this team in a long time.
Also, what's really helpful, like, for being keep the positive train going, is that second half. Arkansas came back, tied the game at 24, and Spartans like, okay, whatever, go down and score a touchdown for the game winner. Like, that game, you could have seen, because you look at second half where not many points, they had it was a slow burn to come back. They had the field goal, Arkansas, Spartans punted on a couple plays, touchdown again for Arkansas, punt again, a couple punts back and forth, whatever, when it gets down to crunch time, 24-17. And then also, did you see the crappy try to down the punt and the guy falls in the end zone? Did you see that?
Yeah, that was kind of a raw deal. Well, no, because the idea is, like, his momentum was taking him into the end zone, so he was trying to bat back towards the 1 yard line.
I don't know. I do better. That's the only criticism I have. Do better in that situation. It just looked weird and funky and fluky. But Arkansas goes down and scores after that punt. It's 24-24. It's like, I would have given anything to say, no way Spartans are going to win this game. They're going to blow it or lose in overtime or something. Not only they didn't blow it, touchdown, and then they picked off Arkansas for the win.
Yeah, and they did it actually with both quarterbacks. Like, we didn't really talk about Nick Nash as well.
Yeah.
But they were using him as kind of like a really interesting changeup, you know, in the same way that we've talked about, with, for instance, with Chase Court at Boise, a guy who can run a little bit. And he had an impact in this game too. You know, he scored one of those touchdowns early in the first half that San Jose State had on the ground. You know, he came in, he had 7 yards. He set them up in a manageable second down situation right away on that game winning drive. And then boom, you know, you got three straight plays to Walker for 12, Walker for 18, and then Jaquan Blackwell, who had another touchdown early in the game. You know, he put them in position, and then Dijon Packer basically ran untouched to the end zone.
And that was it. That's how they get the win.
That was it, yeah.
And they pick up, well, I guess they pick off Arkansas to secure the victory. So this, like you said, this was not a fluke win at all. This was a game where they're ahead. A few more chances could have a few more points. And when it got tough, it's not the old team that just kind of gave up.
No.
So clearly, Brett Brennan's biggest victory as Spartans head coach.
Their first Power 5 victory since 2006.
Yeah, when they beat Stanford.
And if I remember correctly, I forget who tweeted it out, but it's the first time they've beaten a Power 5 team other than Stanford since 1992.
Ooh, how many times have they beaten Stanford?
I think it was like 3 times.
Stanford was pretty bad before Jim Harbaugh got there. They were just awful.
I think if I remember correctly, and this is another tweet, I can't remember who to attribute it to. The last time San Jose State beat a Power 5 team, that team fired their coach and then hired Jim Harbaugh.
I don't think... shoot, who's their coach? Chad Morris. Chad Morris is not getting fired.
No, but did you happen to see the mentions that Arkansas was getting after this game?
Not really. I looked a little bit at the halftime. What was going on?
There was a lot of clown gifts. You know, Chad yeah. Morris showing up to the press conference in a full clown getup.
Well, hey, you lost. Here, right here. They outplayed us. They outcoached us. And I'm very disappointed in the effort we got tonight. So he blamed everybody, including himself, for the loss. Okay. Oh, this is great. This is lovely. For three quarters, they were the SEC football team. They took it to us. Oh, boy. Calm down there, Chad. But I'll agree. Yeah, they took it to you because you're not very good, Arkansas.
Not right now, you're not.
Not right now. And so this is, like, if we look forward, some people might put this on our mentions, I think. Is this like a program-changing win for the Spartans?
It might be.
Does it depend on what happens in the next couple of weeks? If this wins for not, and they just happen to go 2-10?
I mean, because I'm tempted to hedge just because, you know, development is hardly ever linear, mm-hmm. per se. And you know, we're obviously going to talk about it more when we get to next week's preview, but it doesn't really get any easier because now they have to go on the road and face Air Force on a short week.
Friday night, yeah.
And, you know, there's still an upward climb, you know, with Hawaii and Nevada alternately looking pretty solid. Fresno State finally getting into the win column.
They go to Army and to Hawaii, and they play Boise State.
Yeah. So it's going to be a tough road to hoe. And if it doesn't necessarily look pretty from week to week, you know, this is still a team that has at least shown the capacity to surprise. So you can't necessarily expect to walk over them anymore.
Is there anybody else on the schedule you think they could surprise?
Well, I mean, that triple overtime game against Hawaii last year?
I guess technically a surprise for me would be beating anybody besides New Mexico. Is that fair?
I mean, I'll put it like this. Like I just said with the Lobos a minute ago, they've shown something. You know, they've shown enough to be optimistic that they could make some noise or at least create some headaches.
Yeah, and you've been on this for a while, like off-season.
Teams on the way to the top, yeah.
Off-season, preseason stuff, like, well, watch, they may not get the wins, but they'll be closer, maybe get somebody here or there.
Yeah.
Would it be Arkansas? We didn't think so, especially after how they did fairly well versus a Rams team we think that's better than San Jose State, at least coming into this week.
Exactly.
All right, so what do we got next year?
We got Nevada at UTEP with Wolfpack taking care of business on the road, 37-21.
Is there a quarterback controversy coming up in Reno?
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there should be.
Because
they did look a little better all around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't have quite the same obvious mistakes that they had in weeks past. And the offense, for the most part, despite a couple of hiccups, mostly took care of business. You know, they had a fumble in the first half and they had an interception right before halftime. But, you know, every single time other than that, they got into UTEP territory, they marched down the field for a touchdown. I mean, in some respects, this game was a little weird. And the more I think about it, the more I think it was just the fact that the way things unfolded made it seem like it was a little closer than it probably was. And if you just look at the drive chart, for instance, especially like the first UTEP's drive chart, first drive, UTEP marches down the field 10 plays, 70 yards for a score.
Who are they, Army?
Exactly, right? And then they had their other two scoring drives were 10 plays, 86 yards, 17 plays, 75 yards in the third quarter. And then their longest drive beyond that was 18 yards. You know, they turned the ball over three times.
Yeah, a couple interceptions that don't help.
So, you know, other than the turnovers, the team did look more proficient all around with Christian Solano under center. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when Malik Henry came to the game, they didn't seem like they were missing a beat. I think they were just trying to get a sense of what the offense might look like, how it might operate with both of those guys under center, especially Carson Strong, who apparently was injured.
Yeah, he got banged up a bit too much, was out. And Solano is probably going to be the starter. And he's also back a week or so early from a hand injury. They're thinking most likely not till October.
Mm-hmm.
So he came back and did fine. It'll be interesting. Like, being UTEP is fine. They're garbage. But they, 21 points, are worst teams in the country, essentially. There is a little bit of concern just because they held the ball for so often. But when they didn't, Nevada made those picks and made the plays to score points off of those. The three picks, they, Loxley and Jones, they took care of business. They held the rushing game reasonably in check for them overall, outside of those couple of super long drives. But I'm wondering if this is I'm leaning toward, here's why Jay Norvell went with the quarterback Solano, because okay, Carson Strong is a little banged up from the last week playing Weber State and whatever happened. You get UTEP, you're more than likely going to beat UTEP, whoever's at quarterback, which proved to be the case. Solano's healthy. Let's see what he has against a team and not put him out there in a conference game versus Hawaii, which will be difficult next week, which is at home. So I'm wondering it'll be come down to Solano Strong. I don't think Malik Henry's going to be in the mix. They probably got him in there. Hey, let's see what he got. We're comfortably ahead. Let's put him in there for a handful of plays, see what he can do. Completed both those passes. I think there will be – I don't know who would be starting right now, but I'm betting there will be some sort of look at who's going to start next week versus Hawaii.
I think – I don't know if they can afford to get sucked into playing more than one guy.
That's
I
mean, they pick a guy,
I think that Solano probably showed enough that he should be the guy. But I think they're probably going to take as much time as they can in practice this week to figure that out 100%.
Remember, he's basically the starter anyways.
Yeah, and, you know, because I think we've seen that Hawaii has a beatable defense. So it's going to be especially important that they make that right decision, because if they want to be a contender in the West Division, it's going to start right away, because that's exactly what Hawaii wants to be as well.
And Hawaii might be a West contender. Nevada, I'm not sure. We'll see who's there or not. But all right, next game. Is it the Sacramento State, Fresno State game? Really quick?
Yeah.
You don't sound too fond of what happened in this game.
It was fine.
You got the win. There you go. You won your first game.
That's true. It was also tied at 20 late in the fourth quarter.
Hey, that 20-point fourth quarter explosion. Perfect. So what were the issues here? Because
it was fine.
Rain had passed fine. He moved the ball well. Running game, just okay. Got some touchdowns. Rush defense, very good. Pass defense, TBD.
Pass defense, still kind of an unexpected problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so here are some concerns. Right. They missed three field goals. And granted, the one from 49 is not a gimme by any stretch. But, you know, he also, Cesar Silva, that is, missed two attempts from inside, you know, 40 yards. So even though, for the most part, when Fresno State was able to get across the 40, they were able to score. Those three kind of disastrous ends to drives really made the game a lot closer than it probably should have been. Especially when you look at the drive chart, and they were able to, you know, take advantage of pretty good field position throughout. Like, the average Fresno State drive started on their own 42 yard line, and Sacramento State on average was starting at its own 19. So this game should not have been as close as it was. And on a per-play basis, too, they had a pretty significant advantage as well throughout the game. Like, at the end of the game, they held Sacramento State to just 4.2 yards per carry. So the defense was more or less as it was, as we had been accustomed to seeing in the last couple of years. But they also gave up some chunk plays as well, especially with that passing game. And so I'm still kind of like, I just don't know.
It's hard, like, hard to tell.
I want
to
say it's fine, but there were just enough things about this game that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, you're right, because it's the first one. They lost to Minnesota and then also USC. And so it's like, okay, beat FCS team. It's still, for being a month in the season, it's still hard to tell what this Fresno team kind of is at some parts of it, with it being their first victory. But they get the win. That's all that matters.
Oh, yeah. And they also had, like, what, three turnovers in this game?
Oh, and a missed extra point. Sorry to bring that up as well.
I meant to bring that up.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
I promise I did. But it was just like, I don't know. Because, I mean, in this case, like, there was no one person you can really pin it on. Because, you know, they tried to get Zane Pope involved in the ground game, and he just kind of fumbled it away in the first half. But it was really kind of the fumbles in the second half that let Sacramento State hang around in this game. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I guess it's fine. It's a 14-point win, but I'm not necessarily enthused.
Well, the next week it's at New Mexico State, so I was like, well, what are you going to learn from that game as well?
That's true.
And so will they put up more points than New Mexico did, 55?
Probably not.
Probably not. Can they score 55 against anybody? If they can't, that's do it for Sac State, question. That's a problem. Right? Well, not a problem, but just a thing to look at.
I mean, I don't know. It just depends on how you slice things. Because, you know, Sacramento State did have a few big chunk plays. But, you know, Kevin Thompson had 233 yards and three touchdowns. And I would say at least half of that came on five completions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's a plus in the fact that the defense did break up eight passes, including Justin Rice, who had three pass breakups. You know, Ricky McCoy got his hands up on a couple passes. So, you know, like I said, it's fine. It's a win. And
a win's a win.
God knows they needed it.
Exactly. You got the first win of the year. You got to do something like that, right?
Yeah.
All right. So is it time for the wacky Colorado State-Toledo game?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
This game. Okay. The very end of the game was basically Hawaii-Arizona, except it did not go into Mount West's favor.
Nope.
Nate Craig Myers catches a pass. Gets stopped, like, at what, the 2-yard line? 1-yard line?
Mm-hmm.
Extremely close. Game over. And also, just saying, told you, he's going to be a good receiver for this team.
Well, you're forgetting, too, that that happened at the end of the first half, too.
Oh, it did. That's right. What? Put in the end zone, Rams. What are you doing? Score. Well,
it was just like it was a Hail Mary that came up 2 yards short in the first half, too.
Odds of connecting on that one thing, not very good. Odds of the exact same play happening twice in a game where you're short, also extremely rare. Also, I think your quarterback's fine, Rams. Patrick O'Brien, not too bad.
400 yards?
Yeah, 405 exact. Marvin Kinsey, he back-to-back games, two huge plays, and he's had all three touchdowns in two games for the year, and I think he has 80% of his yardage in two games as well, out of the four in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this team has the offense, this is kind of what the offense almost used to be a couple years ago, or what we thought it could be. Good passing game, maybe not this good at 400 yards. Great, good running game, obviously not as good. But here's the thing, you have like nearly 700 yards of offense and you still lose?
It's because the defense sucks, dude.
I know, I'm just saying. It's, oh man.
They gave up nearly 9 yards a play.
On the ground. Or 10 on the ground, yeah.
No, just period.
Oh, period.
9 yards per play.
Hey, their pass defense could give them credit for that. 6-15, Toledo.
I mean, who cares?
You still lost.
They had zero sacks. And I believe they only had, like, what, four tackles for loss?
No.
Three tackles for loss?
No, one.
One tackle for loss. I overestimated the Rams' defense.
It's hard to do.
They had one quarterback hit the entire game. What is this defense doing?
Same as always does, which is nothing.
It's just, what do you do now if you're a Rams fan or if you're Mike Bobo? Like, you can't.
You have your defibrillator nearby because the games will be like this throughout the whole year. Offense, yeah, defense. Oh, I scored. Up and down games. Have something to level yourself out with or have that nearby if you're an older person listening to this show with maybe some heart issues. Be careful when you watch the games. But it's right. It's the defense. It's like, let them down. The offense, outside of getting those, what, 4 or 5 total yards at the goal line, there's not much more they could have done to win this game for them.
I mean, they go to Utah State next week. Is Utah State going to treat this defense like Stony Brook?
Oh, boy. Possibly. Why not? We'll get to that game, but Jalen Warren looks really good. Really, he's going to be newcomer of the year. I don't think there's any question. Is there a newcomer award or is it just freshman award?
I don't think there's an official
newcomer we'll make of the one. Year award. We'll make one. I think right now he's my newcomer of the year.
Okay.
Just saying. He's already out past Gerald Bright, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I don't see why not. With Toledo, who didn't even pass the ball very well, still managed to put up 41 points.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, in terms of raw total offense, the Rams outgamed Toledo by about 150 yards. But on a per-play basis, this was the worst defensive performance that the Rams have had all season.
By far. And then also doesn't help. They missed a field goal. Could have made a difference. I guess one good thing, the one interception they did have didn't lead to any points. That's the one of the few times the defense made a stand, so good job there. But there's not much, like you said, end of the half, there's very few things to look at offensively and say, all right, you would have won the game because of this. But like defense,
and we don't usually bring it up, but they are also the conference's most undisciplined team. You know, they had 11 penalties in this game for 82 yards, and just on a per game basis, Nobody's racking up more penalty yards in the Mountain West than the Rams are right now.
Shooting yourself in the foot, folks.
You can't do that.
What do you make of this with, like, Nate Kriegmeier's being good receiver? Warren Jackson had 12 for 132. Is there, like, this offense is looking to be one of the best in the conference. Is that too far to say? Too much to say?
I don't think so, no.
Because what they have, and adding him who comes in right away to play quite well. It's just, all we're going to say is we'll see defense, but, like, they probably could score points against Utah State.
Okay, so now on a per-play basis, the Rams are number one in the conference by yards per play. Better than Utah State, better than Hawaii, better than Boise, 7.17 yards per play.
Okay.
But the problem is
Who have they played? Toledo?
They played Colorado. They played Toledo. They played Western Illinois.
Okay. Figure that in there as well for people.
But, you know, they're also dead last in the conference in yards per play on defense. They've given up 6.86 yards per play. I mean, at some point, something's got to give. And you might figure in any given week that might be, you know, winning a 42-35 shootout or something like that. But at the rate things are going, they're just as likely to lose a lot of those kinds of games as well.
Because you're right. That difference is, what, 0.3 yards?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're, like... If your offense is great, but if their defense are just, what, 10th in the conference instead of 12th?
They're 16th nationally on a per-play basis on offense. You want to guess who they're behind?
Who?
They're behind UCF.
Okay.
And everybody talks about how UCF's such a great and innovative offense and things like that. Colorado State's right there on that side of the ball. It's got to be so frustrating.
It has to be. Like... You know, people like the Rams, cover the Rams. It is. It's like, defense, give me something decent. Here's the thing, too. It's not a one-year thing. This defense has been bad since Mike Bobo stepped on campus.
If the defense could be below average, they could easily go bowling this year.
Seems like
a wildly improbable if at this point.
Wow. Not even average, but below average.
Below, I'm talking about like 8th or 9th in the conference.
Wow. That is... All right, I guess.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Like, when we're talking about the offense, and through four games, it's not like it's a small sample size either. Like, they've run 308 plays on offense, which is the 14th most nationally. So, like, the offense has been on the field a lot, and they have done a lot with their opportunities. They've also scored at least 30 points a game in each of their games so far.
And they're still this bad.
And they're still bad.
Who do they get next week? It's Utah State?
Yeah. They're on the road at Utah State.
Is that a Saturday night game?
They're giving up 40 points a game so far.
Will Utah State score 50 points?
They might.
60.
Well, I don't know about that.
you draw a line at 60 versus an FBS team.
I mean, I would just say, we'll talk about this more probably in a lot of previews to come.
Yes.
Just start taking the over against Colorado State.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
End it to Nevada or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if you play your college DFS is back, go pick up your Rams, right?
Yeah.
I guess. All right. So next game is, we perceived as the game of the day, 23-17 Utah State beating San Diego State. So, we now have.
Did not disappoint either.
No, it was a exciting game. Even the points weren't always there, or weren't there in this game. It's still a lot of stuff happened, a lot of good stuff happened, a lot of fun stuff happened. Aztecs are now, with that one loss, the only undefeated team is Boise State.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the big play of the game, it was the first Ishaq Bond pick six, which might have been the difference in this game because they won by 6 points, interception.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go to Ryan Agnew for a minute here?
Are we going straight to the end of the game?
Yeah, why not? Is that okay?
Let's do it.
Is that like spoiling the ending of the game?
No. We could talk about it.
Utah State, again, missed field goal. What's up with the field goals at the conference? I thought there was good kickers, Matt. What's happening?
We'll talk more about that in a minute.
Okay, let's definitely do that. So, missed field goal, 23-17. San Diego State gets the ball at their own 25-yard line. Okay, got a ways to go. Move the ball, good. First down. Little golf club, good job. Keep the ball moving. Incomplete pass, broken up. Incomplete pass. What the heck happened on 4th and 10? If you just read the box score, a loss of 37 yards plus an intentional grounding. What are they doing?
Okay, so I want to extrapolate on that point.
Go for it.
Because when you look at this box score, you know, Agnew was 20 of 37, 281 yards, two touchdowns and an interception.
Mm-hmm.
And that play is kind of emblematic of, I mean, I don't know if you want to call it like an inability or just a tendency to just kind of move off his spot in the pocket really quickly and to try to make something out of whatever opportunity is presented to him. And I think that one of the stories of this game that can't be glossed over is how that really cut both ways. Obviously, the last play of the game is kind of the most glaring negative example.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that same elusiveness is what enabled San Diego State to claw their way back into this game to begin with. You know, and you really don't have to look any further than the two touchdowns that he threw to Isaiah Richardson and Kobe Smith.
Yeah.
Because they were like do or die fourth down plays where, you know, if they didn't convert, Utah State wouldn't be able to step on the Aztecs' throats and really assert themselves. But he was able to extend the play. He was able to get the ball down the field. I think that there are still maybe questions about his arm strength, because the fact that they were able to turn those two plays into touchdowns probably says more about the receivers than it does about him, because they were not necessarily great decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that against, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say that UTSA was an unprepared secondary, but, you know, those are the kinds of plays that could easily have been knocked down or turned into interceptions or something like that. So the decision-making is still kind of suspect, even though the overall stat line suggests that he did a lot to bring San Diego State back in this game. And he kind of did when you consider that the running game wasn't really able to get anything going. You know, they were missing Juwan Washington. They lost Jordan Bird early to injury, and Chance Bell only had 63 yards and 18 carries. So he did what he could to bring them back in this game. And he had a lot of solid and a lot of nice throws. He was able to distribute the ball around, you know, and they did have those couple of scoring drives, but, you know, you see that and now you see that last play, and that's kind of what gives you pause about whether they're actually going to be able to meet their ceiling, or whether the first 3 weeks are more of kind of what we saw last September, where once we get into conference play, you know, those one score victories that they have against kind of iffy opposition are suddenly going to turn against them.
Yeah, and they put a lot on his shoulders because running game wasn't very good overall. Yeah. They didn't have Juwan Washington, which didn't help. He's still out with the ankle injury, is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
So yeah, Chase did Bell a couple yards here, 63 Jasmine, 33 yards. But this game, this team, it's basically, if the running game's not going, they're in trouble, right?
See, I don't know, because
Or is Agnew good enough to do something?
Because we saw him make plays. We saw him move the ball. And so I'm not saying like you discount the Aztecs entirely.
Well, I'm not doing that, but I'm just saying odds of them winning if the running game is subpar.
And I mean, and let's not forget too that Utah State had, you know, he was able to overcome four Utah State sacks, and the fact that they had 10 tackles for loss and they still almost came back and won this game.
Yeah, it's true. And they overcame a lot to win because Utah State's offense was struggling to get to really good San Diego State defense. Jordan Love, did you know, first time in 10 games he did not have a passing touchdown.
And that's a credit to the Aztecs' defense.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Which
yeah.
You cannot ignore. Like, you know, even though they were down 23-3 at one point in this game, I thought the Aztecs' defense played their ass off.
Yeah, because you had to pick six.
Which doesn't necessarily show up in the stat sheet, because I think they didn't have any sacks.
Yeah.
He only had six TFLs, but Darren Hall had three pass breakups. Mm-hmm. Barku had a couple pass breakups. They gave themselves every opportunity to try to win this game, and the offense just really didn't come to life until it was too late.
Yeah, they had the four sacks allowed, 10 TFLs allowed on the Utah State side. They were getting negative plays more often than not, like including sack yardage. Overall, Agnew minus 32. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, it's... I'm surprised San Diego State did make that run and come back a little bit, because they're down. It's good for them, too. It's like, okay, you're still down 23-3 late in the game. They had an extended drive for a touchdown, two extended drives, I guess a 91-yard drive, which is nice. The missed field goal, so they have all the momentum going touchdown, forced punt, touchdown, missed field goal, go down. But those final plays, they just unfortunate were reverted back to some old Aztec team of the good old early days and decades past where they can't get it done because they're thinking of a bad team, not just kind of joking around. But they had the opportunities because the defense forced Utah State to not score, and the offense finally took advantage and found something against this Aggie defense to score. And his defense is probably – is this the best defense they're facing here on out?
Who, Utah State?
No, San Diego State.
Let's see. Who do they have left on the schedule at this point? Because they're off next week.
Well, got Fresno.
So they're at Colorado State, home versus Wyoming.
Well, I mean, in Fresno. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Try to think, because they only put up 17 points. Like, they, like, if you're looking at the Aztecs game, if they put up 21 points, there's a decent chance they're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so they clearly could have had that because they only allowed technically 17 because the six was the interception.
Yeah.
So, like, this is not to say San Diego State's bad. I think this showed a lot more for me for Utah State for coming out with that quick 20-3 lead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are like, well, is Utah State good? Are they going to be bad? They, at this point in the year, who cares? They lost their offensive line. Who cares? They lost a lot of second defenders. Running back, losing. But Jalen Warren, as we get to mention earlier, he's now with the carry differential, he's just starting running back by far. Gerald Wright only had six carries for 18 yards. He's a good back, so it's good to have the two guys. But Jalen Warren, clearly the number one running back on this team. 17 for 74. He's going to lead them going forward. And then, like, Savon Scarver's finally showing what he can do receiving-wise. He had that one big play of nearly 50 yards.
Five catches, and 90 altogether.
Yeah, and even Jalen Warren had three catches as well. And so it's Sosie Mariner, who is doing good things coming in from Utah. 7 for 74. So they're rounding the offense out with two good receivers, good running back, two good running backs, but one really good running back. Lot kicking game has potential. It's not going as good as they wanted to, just because they, you know, I mean, missing kicks and stuff. You know what I mean? It's not good. You want to make
I mean, Eberle only missed one, but he made three field goals in this game.
Sure, I know. I'm saying, like, he's missed a couple before. I'm just kind of nitpicky, but I'm saying, like, for all those people saying Utah State's done, they're not going to do anything. New coach, do this, do that. And I was skeptical a bit as well, because round two of a retread coach usually doesn't go well. And so far, they're doing quite well.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed on the Utah State's offense just by the fact that even though they only had three plays of more than, 15 yards through the air, that they were able to use, they were able to find ways to use their tempo to their advantage anyway. Yeah, so even though they didn't have the explosiveness that we have seen from them in weeks past, that they were able to get the ball, for instance, to CIOC Mariner, you know, seven catches, 74 yards, and his long was 16, but, you know, they used him to move the chains often. You know, Scarver had the big play, but, you know, he was their next best guy. You know, he moved the chains. So they were, and they were able to spread it around too. You know, Carson Terrell had four catches, Jordan Nathan had four catches. They were able to get everybody involved and really keep San Diego State from keying on one player or another. And I think that that's to Utah State's credit that they were able to kind of adapt what they usually do to be able to keep this game out of reach.
So are you buying Utah State to be a contender when they play Boise State in the next month or something?
Well, yeah, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I did too. And, like, well, what Raj is going to say, because he's always like, beat us finally and we'll see talk, which he's not wrong. Because Utah
And like I said, let's not overlook. They also had 10 tackles for loss. Tipa Galliai was a monster in this game.
Yeah. David Woodward as well had double-digit tackles.
Yeah. Galliai had a sack and three tackles for loss. If they can do that.
T.J. Williams stepped up big, yeah.
Like, we've talked about Boise and kind of their strengths and their weaknesses week in and week out. You never know.
Yeah. Slow start, perhaps. That's kind of been their thing this year a little bit, to not to come on strong late, so... We still got a ways to go because that's not until freaking November. So
yeah,
let's get to the final game really quick. Hawaii 35, Central Arkansas 16. Biggest thing for me in this game, which is not a shot, Cole McDonald had a pretty good game. Only one interception. So he drops his pace from going from 39 picks per year to, like, what, 30?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it wasn't a perfect performance from the Warriors because they did turn the ball over. What was it, four times in this game?
Yeah, lost three fumbles into one pick, so that doesn't help.
But for once, that wasn't McDonald's fault. I believe it was actually Miles Reed who fumbled the ball away twice. But, you know, between, you know, Reed and McDonald, they did have a solid running game. You know, they had 91 yards on 14 carries, and they were able to distribute the ball, and Jared Smart was kind of the receiver du jour in this particular game. Eight catches, 121 yards and a score. And they won with a little bit of defense as well. You know, they kept Central Arkansas to basically about 4 yards, 5 yards per play. It's actually 4.4. Excuse me. So I split the difference there. Just an all-around good performance against, you know, Central Arkansas is not a pushover in the FCS ranks. They were undefeated coming into this game, and they had beaten Western Kentucky in week one. Mm-hmm. So this was a very encouraging performance for the Warriors.
Yeah, it is. And it's like not as many picks. And what this does is, well, I thought you'd see Shavon Cordero for a minute just because you're playing Central Arkansas. But I'm betting what this does, which could set up Hawaii for disaster. I don't want to go negative, but I'm going to really quick. Ball sets of confidence with Cole McDonald just a one pick against an opponent they should easily beat. And so while he played better, percentage passing was quite well, what's going to happen when he gets up against actual defenses that aren't Central Arkansas? Like when they play at Boise State, they play Fresno State, they play, we saw what San Jose State did this week to Arkansas. San Diego State's still on the schedule. And so I thought it might be a split time just to see, but it seems like Rolovich is sticking with McDonald basically no matter what, which you could argue that's the correct decision because when he's firing, he's really, really good and one of the best quarterbacks in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen enough over like the last year and change that when this offense is operating without mistakes, you really have to watch out.
Exactly.
And so at least for 1 week, you know, we saw you can, you know, chalk that up into the kind of the win column, I guess, of, you know, this was another week where they avoided the mistakes or rather they kept the mistakes from really coming back to bite them. Because they held Central Arkansas to field goals on multiple occasions. So, you know, like I said, it was just a good all-around performance.
Yeah, it's they did what they had to do. That's all that matters. They won. They got the victory. They move on. They are now, what are they, 3-1 on the year? 4-1?
They are. And they look good, too. They broke out the green jerseys, which I appreciated.
Are they going to bring up the rainbow jerseys, though?
No, it was just the green jerseys for homecoming.
Why is that in the dustbin somewhere or hanging up with mothballs?
You know what they're going to do? They're going to save it for like the season finale or something like that.
Versus Army?
Oh, that would be awesome, sure. Actually.
There's plenty of times. Like Army, it should be for a home game, I believe. Okay, here's the home games they have left. They have Air Force, Fresno, San Jose, San Diego State, and Army. Aztecs, maybe, since they beat them last year?
I think they got to hold out for the Army game.
Army, okay. Because Army, if they keep winning, they might be a ranked Army team at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So... All right.
Oh, by the way, do we need to bring up the AP
poll? I was about to look for it. I was looking as we speak. What happened? Is Boise...
Boise did move up. They are now number 16.
Okay.
Leapfrogged by Cal, interestingly.
Well, Cal beat... Who did they beat yesterday? They beat Washington already.
Yeah, they beat Ole Miss.
Okay.
Not a terribly inspiring Ole Miss. I don't know.
True. On the road, though, as well, I believe.
Yeah, so, you know, they got leapfrogged by Cal, but they're ahead of Washington. They're ahead of Virginia, who also jumped from the 20s into the teens.
Who, by the way, survived Old Dominion, by the way. Survived.
UCF fell from 22, fell from 15 to 22, rather.
Okay.
And as far as the group of five is concerned, that's it.
If you were to put a team, who's 25 in the poll? Because I'm not seeing it here. I don't have it right.
Michigan State.
Really? Barney?
Yeah, we're doing that again.
Who should be? Who do you? If you were to put one team 25, who would you put there? Like group of five? Would you SMU, App State's undefeated, right?
Okay, so I'm just going to list off the others receiving votes real quick, okay. And then I'll give you my answer. So, okay. After Michigan State, in order: Wake Forest, Oklahoma State, SMU,
okay,
yeah. Army, Memphis, Iowa, Appalachian State.
Is App State undefeated though? Right.
Yes, they are.
I might put Army 25.
It's got to be Wake Forest.
No, that's what I'm talking about, group of five team. They're not just any team.
Okay. I said, wait, what are you talking about? No, I mean, if it were any team, I would put Wake Forest. Yeah, if it had to be a group of five team, I would say Memphis. Like, I'm surprised Memphis isn't getting as much love as.
What are they doing this year? What have they done so far? I'm just curious. I don't honestly know too much at the moment.
They are undefeated at the moment.
Okay.
I think they beat Ole Miss as well. I'm trying to remember who else they beat.
Let's see real quick. They are undefeated. They've only allowed 40 points. They've also only played three games. So defense is pretty good for once.
For once, right?
They beat Ole Miss 15-10.
Nice last December.
Here's why they're not getting much love. They beat South Alabama, Memphis, and Southern. So that's part of it why.
That's true.
I guess Army, because they played Michigan super tough, but Michigan's kind of always thought overrated because they got waxed by Wisconsin, which I'm not surprised one bit about. But maybe SMU, I don't know. It's not too far. I'd put Memphis behind those two, SMU and Army at the moment. But beating TCU's pretty good. But SMU's also beaten Arkansas State and North Texas and Texas State. So, I don't know. It's just like putting in the random Power 5 team 22-25. It's like, because we know in the year end, Matt, they'll be likely ranked teams Boise State, Central Florida, and probably at least another Mountain West, another American team in there. So probably
there's gonna be like four or five teams on there. And honestly, it reminds me of something I heard on the radio. I think it was like a week or two ago. It was somebody on Fox Sports Radio.
Why are you listening to Fox Sports Radio?
I mean, because you know, whatever. It was the only thing that was available at the time. That's it was fine. The only thing I could get reception on. But they basically said that like the AP poll, rather than Associated Press, it stands for like Agenda Press. And I was like, honestly, yeah, you know, because that was when Nebraska was ranked for some reason. That was when Maryland was ranked for some reason.
But when you put up 60 some points on a team, Matt, you got to be ranked in your Power 5 school.
Yeah, get whatever.
Is Utah State getting any votes at all in the AP poll?
You know what? I closed the window. I don't think so, though.
What? They should. Like, before they play LSU, I thought they might be, if they win next week, they might be 25th in the country, at least, right on that range.
I think it's probably going to take Utah State a couple more weeks.
Well, they only got a couple of weeks before they lose to LSU. So.
And to answer your question, they are not receiving any votes.
Anybody else from Mountain West, Hawaii? Anybody?
No. Now, as far as a group of five teams are concerned, it's basically in order: Army, Memphis, App State, and then Tulane got exactly one vote.
After their miracle win versus Houston, which, did you see that final play?
I did.
Wild. Let's go for the field goal, guys, and just throw it downfield. The Houston guys basically hugged each other, and the Tulane guy ran through between them and bounced off and scored the touchdown. So, all right. Well, we know what the disrespect always is, so whatever.
That's true.
It happens.
Like I said, none of this matters anyway. The only thing that matters comes out on like the first weekend of November.
It's too early to ask you that, and we're running out of time. We need to wrap this up here. So we'll be back next time for an official. We'll have a preview show because I'm not screwing around with this other website anymore to record stuff. I gave them one final chance, Matt. One.
They're dead. Got burned.
They're dead to us. Because even on Twitter, people are like, oh, this never happened before. I'm like, this happens to us all the time. Well, not all the time, but when we were trying a year ago. So we'll have our show next week, normal format. MWR.com is our website. You know, find us, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, anywhere you can find a podcast, just search Mountain West Wire. We'll pop up. If you want to give us a review, that'd be helpful or fun because we haven't had a review in a while. So I'm just curious what you guys think of the show. If we're doing good, something else you want to do or not do, or I don't know, new host you can mention as well, I guess. I don't know who would do it, but you can put whatever you want in there. But we'll be back next time for week 5 previews, and we'll see you then, everybody.